Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, I'm joined by Al Striano, vice president of business development at EasyWrap. Al's career spans family business, professional sports, corporate leadership, and now helping to grow a company focused on innovative building solutions as well. He first worked in his family's steel business in the Bronx before pursuing professional baseball, spending 4 years in the Detroit Tigers organization. After baseball, Al launched a business career that included senior roles at 3M and Sealed Air before ultimately bringing his expertise to EasyWrap. Along the way, he's built a fascinating perspective on business development, innovation, and the choices we make about whether to stay in the family business or build a career beyond it. Al, welcome to Growing Up B2B. Great to have you.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Hey, let's get right into it. Let's start with your early days. You first worked in your family's steel business in the Bronx. What do you remember most about those early experiences?
The first thing is obvious. I think that I grew up in a family business. And so my early experiences started when I could start with family dinners and we talked about business. My mother and father talked about business. That was the debate table. I'm Italian and I grew up in New York, and that's where Italian families debate. And so I learned a lot about business just by my mother and father talking back and forth. And then as I got older, I was able to contribute to it. I was one of five children and I was the oldest son, which kind of gave me, in an Italian family, gives you a little bit of privilege. And I just wanted to grow up being like my father.
Okay. It's interesting how, and I've heard this from a lot of guests, that just by virtue of exposure, just by observing, I think we take for granted how much we learn from that previous generation in terms of how they do what they do and what they do. And that's something that carries with us, whether we recognize it or not. It seeps into our DNA and becomes a part of us.
Yeah. If your father is everything, and your mother, obviously, but your father is off working and you're always curious, what does he really do? And so my trips with him to the office when I was young, and I couldn't work, but I was allowed to observe him and sit in his office with him and meetings and so forth, because I was always curious, gee, what does dad really do? He's gone all day. He comes home late at night. He does work at home in his study at night. God, what is all this about? So I think a natural curiosity about what your parents really do is critically important.
Yeah. I think about the early years when I was very little. My first observations of my father was when I would come to the office that I noticed he had the biggest desk and people scurried around a lot. So I'm like, okay, he seems to be important here. And then he was a morning guy. So right. I was an early riser and he was up already. And back then it was like, he'd write on these big, long yellow pads and he's like making all his notes. And the other observation is, wow, he works pretty hard.
Oh yeah. Very hard, right?
He's
very
up
hard.
Working before I'm even awake and he's working. I think I took that away. Let's talk about a bit of a part of your journey that I'm sure a lot of people will find fascinating. You spent 4 years with the Detroit Tigers organization. So talk about that for a minute. What was that experience like? And then, if any, what lessons did you carry forward from baseball to business?
Baseball was everything to me, everything. That's what I lived for. And actually, it was not just baseball. It was all sports. I got to the Detroit Tigers because I probably had the best coach I could possibly have, which was my father. My father was a semi-pro baseball player for the New York Giants.
Wow.
And so was my Uncle Phil. And they got a hold of me from when I was very little. And as my mother always said, I was sitting in a high chair with a baseball in my hand. She said I'd be throwing it all over the place, breaking dishes and stuff in the kitchen. And that was the very beginning of it. I just fell in love with baseball and I progressed. I played baseball all through the younger phases of baseball. Then in high school, I was a four-year varsity letter player. I was drafted by the New York Mets out of high school in my senior year.
Wow.
Turned them down and went to for my first year of college, I went to the University of Kentucky. I made all conference. I left there and I went back to Long Island University, came back home and went to Long Island University. I played for Long Island University on the post campus. I was a two-time All-American there. And then I was drafted out of my junior college, number one by the Tigers. I signed and I went away to play ball. And it was just like a dream come true. All kids that like sports or whatever particular team, their vision is always to play in the big leagues. I want to be a professional. And I worked very hard to get to that level, but it wasn't work. It was joy and passion. And when I got there, I was very happy, probably the happiest I've ever been in my life. And then playing with some of these people, I'll tell you one story about my first spring training, which is hysterical. My father couldn't believe it when I told him this on the phone. So I walk into spring training my first day, right? So I walk into the clubhouse down in Lakeland, Florida, Marchant Stadium, which is the Tiger Town, as it's called. And I walk into the clubhouse and there's a big locker there for me. And I walked in 3 hours early to tell you how excited I was and how nervous I was. And there was a locker room there for me and my name was on the locker. And next to me on one side was Norm Cash. Next to Norm Cash was Frank Howard.
Oh, wow.
And then on the other side of the room was Al Kalin. And all the way down to Eddie Brinkman, Freehand, all of these people were there with their lockers and their uniforms and everything were hanging there. And there was my uniform hanging there. And on my uniform, the number was zero. And I saw how appropriate, zero, because I'm nothing. I'm nothing yet. Then we go out and we practice. And when I get out there, I'm just standing there by myself because I don't know who to loosen up with. Frank Howard, who is a very big man, very tall, very big man. He has a very high voice. So Frank Howard says to me, "Hey, Al, want to have a catch?" So I said, "Yeah, of course." So I'm standing like 30 feet away from him, tossing it back and forth. He's a very tall guy. I must have thrown it 30 feet over his head. So everybody around me is starting to laugh. And I'm so embarrassed and I'm so humiliated and so nervous. I'm surprised I didn't poop my pants. So anyway, we go work out. We come back in and we're all taking showers. So I'm taking a shower and I'm trying to be modest, like, guys, I'm like the rookie and I'm trying to just hide if I could. So who walks in but Al Kaline? I said, "Holy smokes, Al Kaline is taking a shower here next to me." So when the whole thing is over, I go home and I call my father. He said, "How did spring training go? How did your first day go?" I said, "Dad, you won't believe it." He says, What happened? What'd you do?" I said, "I took a shower with Al Kaline was standing right next to me in the shower." My father says, "Out of all of this, that's what you got out of your first spring training." It was so funny, but it was so like, what? Like, he's real. He's not this caricature that on TV. He's a real human. And that was my first funny experience. It was like unbelievable.
Wow. That's amazing. What would have been really funny if it's in the shower, you said, "Hey, can I have your autograph?"
I was too afraid to ask anybody for their autograph. That's another funny story. So when we were coming into, when we're leaving one of the days out there, and I was sitting with my friend, who was also in the spring training team with me, and Jerry Manuel, who was also with the Tigers. So I'm walking out of the locker room, and there's Al Kaline, Norm Cash, and Bill Freehand, and Mickey Lolich and those guys. So I took out my scorecard that I had from the game that I keep score. It's the like I have it, I do. So I took it out and I went over to them. Jerry says, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm getting their autograph." He said, "You can't get their autograph." I said, "What do you mean I can't?" He says, are you kidding me? You're going to humiliate yourself. You're a rookie on the same team that they're on, and you're going to walk up them and they'll laugh you right out of the stadium. I said, really? Why? He says, you got to be stupid. How do you think that they're going to take it that one of their teammates is going to ask them for their autograph? I said, well, I wasn't thinking like that. I'm thinking that these guys are like super people. He says, don't you dare ask them for their autograph or I'm walking away from you.
All right. I got to ask, and this is a bit of a tangent, but back in the day, I was a Mark Fidrich fan.
Yeah.
Is it true that he used to talk to the baseball on the mound?
Yes, it is true. And as a matter of fact, Mark Fidrich and I played together.
Oh my gosh.
In Clinton, Iowa. And my manager in Clinton, Iowa was Jim Leland.
Okay.
Arguably be a Hall of Fame manager. Mark would go out to the mound, and that was in Clinton, Iowa. That was in A-ball.
Okay.
So Mark would go out to the mound. He'd be talking to the ball. He'd be walking around the mound. And Leland would be sitting there, and he'd say, is that guy effing nuts? I don't know. I said, I think so. He's talking to himself? Yeah. And then this was Mark's first season. And it was both of our first seasons playing for Leland. Then Mark started to pitch, and he was doing really well. So Leland says to him, he comes off the mound. He says, what's wrong with you? He says, nothing. He says, who are you talking to on the mound? He says, I'm talking to myself. He says, what are you telling yourself? I'm telling myself to don't get nervous and don't worry about it and just keep throwing straight and let them try to hit it. So he says, keep doing what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. So then when he gets up to the big leagues, we're in spring training games again. And our manager at that time was Billy Martin.
Oh, my gosh.
So we get up there, and Mark is going through his at. We're playing the Red Sox. The Red Sox were in Winter Haven. So we would play them almost every other day because Winter Haven and Lakeland are very close to each other.
Close to each other, yeah.
And so we were playing them. Even the minor league teams were playing. We were playing Boston like every other day. Mark is pitching, and Ralph Houck is saying to Billy Martin is saying, what the heck? What is this guy out of his mind? So then one of the other pitchers that is there who was on the team with Mark in the where I was, he says, he's talking to himself. He says, he's talking to himself. Yeah, he's talking to himself. He said, all right, can you pitch? Yeah, he wouldn't be here if he couldn't pitch. He said, is he major league potential? He said, just watch him. Just watch him. And he started throwing, and he was great. Then somebody got a big hit off him, maybe a double or maybe a home run or whatever. He's walking around the bases talking to the bat, to the hitter. He's yelling at the hitter for hitting the home run. Oh, God. He was totally out of his mind, but what an arm he had.
Oh, yeah. Putting Mark Fidrich aside, let's talk about baseball and business. What if there was one anecdote or some carry forward? Because I've always noticed this, Al. Any people I've encountered in business that have played either at the D1 or even higher level as you have, some of the most driven people I know, failure is sort of not an option in their vocabulary. And there's this sort of this drive to success and to winning, whatever that win looks like, that's just wired in. So talk for a minute about what, when you look back at your baseball years and then your career ended and then you came into business, what was something that you maybe carried forward from baseball into business?
When I was in baseball, I learned that competition is critically important. And I'm probably the most competitive person you ever met. I'm driven by performance, not to succeed. Success is a byproduct of performance. And what my father always said to me, because he was a great coach, he pitched to me to the point where his arm fell apart, literally. As he got older, his hand would shake. He couldn't shake someone's hand without it, because he tore all the tendons in his arm throwing to me. True story. So he would always say that the only way to success is hard work. And he says, you have to learn how to love to sweat. You can't just accept it. You have to love it. And hard work is the vehicle to carry you forward. And he said, you have to practice, practice, and sweat. And then later on, what translated to business is preparation, preparation, perspiration. And that's what I say to my people when they're doing something. I said, you're not going to be perfect. None of us are perfect. And you're not going to have a perfect day every day. You're not going to go 4 for 4 every day. It doesn't happen that way. But what will happen is that you practice or you prepare and you perspirate. And those are the three keys to success. And over the long haul, if you do that and you're disciplined to do that every single day, you will be successful. And that's what carries over. The other thing that carries over for me is that baseball was everything to me. It was my core. I went to school for business because I wanted to be like my father, but loved baseball. And I loved all sports, but baseball was it for me. And you get such a thrill when you get up to the plate and you hit a home run. There is no better feeling in the world. Nothing better feeling than that when you hit the ball like that. And when you win and your team wins, there's nothing better than that. When I left baseball, there was a big hole in me. And for a couple of years, I was really in a bad way. I was deeply depressed. I did work in the family business after that, and I went back to school to finish my college. But I couldn't get over that emptiness. So as I was working in the family business, my father said, he says, why don't you get involved with the marketing and sales part of this? I said, why do you say that? He says, because I think you're going to find that when you're in marketing and sales, you're going to get the same kind of thrills you do that you get out of sports. So I started to do that. And he was right, because you can hit home runs. You got to prepare and perspirate before you can really put together a great presentation. And you got to learn how to like to sweat, because you got to learn how to like preparation. And with most salespeople, they absolutely hate preparation. They hate planning. They hate doing all those things, which are the vehicle to get to succeed. And they hate sweating. They want to wake up in the morning, scratch their head and say, gee, what am I going to do today with no preparation? And it's the same with marketing. You could put together a proposal or an ad or something that just lights the whole email chain up. And it's very exciting. So I found that the crossover for me is that feeling of victory, that feeling of performance. And that's what juices me.
Wow. So it's very clear. First of all, it sounds like your dad was an amazing man and had tremendous influence on you in many ways. But for a time, you did work under him in the family business. So talk about that for a minute. What was that like?
Do we have to? Okay. All right. So my father wakes up every morning at 4:30.
Okay.
So I now wake up every morning at 4:30, whether I like it or not. It just happens. So he would wake up and he would start preparing for his day and start with a cup of coffee. So when we were in the same house together, I would be sitting there with him having a cup of coffee. And he would start talking to me about what's going to go on, all of his preparation. Then we would get into his car. And this was comical, actually. My father drove a Lincoln Continental town car, which is about 2 city blocks long. My brothers and sisters and I, we called it the Guinea gunboat. He was very short. He was 5'6" tall. He had to look under the steering wheel to drive it. And he smoked a cigar. I couldn't stand it. I would have to roll down the windows. I couldn't stand it. I would get a headache. So that was the first torture of the day. Then he believed that in order to really grow in a business, you had to start at the bottom. You can't start at the top just because you're the son of the boss. No one will respect you. So you have to start at the bottom. So he would drive me to the steel yard, and I had to work in the steel yard moving steel. And I don't think there's a more difficult job in the world than doing that. And I would work there all day, and then he would have me go up to the office. And the office was a few blocks up the street. And then I would have to wait for him until 7 or 8 o'clock to go home. And then when I was older and on my own, when I was working in the family business, I had to do the same routine, but I had my own car. He wouldn't let me leave until he left. So I said to him one day, I said, Dad, what's the point of this? He said, because you're the son of the boss. You have to be better than everybody else. You have to work harder than everybody else. You have to perform more than anybody else. So when I get to the office, you have to be in the office because you're the son of the boss. When I leave the office, you have to leave me so everybody knows you're the son of the boss and you're going to work harder than anybody. He says, you'll find a lot of people in life that are smarter than you, better looking than you. I don't know about the better looking part. Smarter than you, better looking than you, more talented than you, stronger than you. But you should never, ever find anybody that can outwork you. Ever. And that resonated with me. And that was the big thing that I got out of that from him. And all my life is hard work, education. And that's what it was like. He wasn't a heavy-handed manager, but on his desk, he had a baseball with a saying on it. Sometimes you have to play hardball. So he was stern. He was direct. He didn't like a lot of fluff to things, but he was very disciplined. And he loved spirited debate. He would call it spirited debate, not argument. And he would say to me, you want to encourage that. You don't want to push that down in people. That's where creative ideas come from, spirited debate. If someone is passionate about something, they may raise their voice a little bit. He says, but don't take that as being angry at you. Take that as that they want to debate you because they think they have an idea that's as good or better than yours. And then he would always say at the end of these, and he would do this to me often, and not only just me, to my brothers and sisters too, because like I said, in an Italian family, Sunday afternoon, it's debate time. And if we weren't debating, he would encourage it. He would plant a seed to get us debating. And that's what happened every Sunday afternoon. And then he would say to us all, he says, just remember this. Words are the lens that focus the mind. The more you communicate, the more argument is not bad. It's you're getting your point across. You're getting clarity. You talk about something, the more clarity you get, and you may find out that the person that is arguing with you may have a better idea than you, or may have an idea that you want to use in your bag of tricks. And your way is not always the only way, and your may never not always be the right way. So you have to encourage debate and encourage debate from your people. Now, a lot of people may not agree with that because now in the day of the snowflakes and the woke civilization and all of this other crap that we have going on, like if you raise your voice to somebody, they think you hate them or they think you're doing something wrong. But I don't live that way. It's not in my DNA, and that's not the way I'm made up. So I really believe that debate is good. Productive spirit debate is a good thing.
A lot of what you're saying resonates because my father and I overlapped, and also being Italian, we had a lot of spirited debates as well. And what it came down to was usually no rule book or playbook in terms of how to resolve being at odds on an issue. It was more or less, it was about passion. So who had more passion for the idea?
Yeah.
Sometimes I just say, okay, Dad, we'll do it your way. He was like, we're done fighting over this. I said, yeah, you're far more passionate about this than I am. So we'll do it your way. You own it now. And that's okay. But if it doesn't go well, you own it.
Yeah.
So a lot of times that's how we would, it's just who wants it more?
And that's true. And it goes both ways. Sure. If I'm on the top side of the argument, then and we do it and we don't do it, it's on me. It's always the person that has the point that we stick to as a team is the point. There's a person that's taking the responsibility and therefore the deliverables and therefore the accountability.
Yeah.
That's just life. That's the way it goes.
Sure.
And I try to say to my people, I said, there's two sides of accountability. You don't have to hide from it. You should encourage it. Because accountability is like creating a competitor for yourself. Because you want to achieve what you said you were going to do. So you're going to work real hard to make the results come out the way you say. And having to be accountable for it is going to make you work harder to make the results right.
Sure, sure.
There's good things in accountability.
Yeah.
They could be good consequences, and there could be bad consequences.
For sure, for sure.
It's all on you.
Yeah, absolutely. So you started working in the family business. After baseball, you came back to the family business, but at some point you moved on. And I think we spoke prior to this conversation. You said there was some thought that you might eventually return, but you didn't. So talk about that, about your decision to move on, and then do I come back or not come back? Because I know a lot of our listeners are probably in a similar scenario and would really be interested in what you have to say about that.
Yeah. And to be completely 100% transparent, it was a very difficult decision. It's not an easy decision. You have, on one side of it, you have your family. They're your blood. They're the people that love you no matter what happens to you or what mm-hmm. you do. And then there's the side of it that is all about you and your career and where you want to go. And the honest truth of the matter is that in my study here, my Bible is always here. It's right here on the corner of my desk.
Okay.
And when I get into situations at a crossroad, I seek the Lord. I pray a lot. I ask him for guidance. It's a very difficult decision. And I pray a lot. I think a lot. And at my time, it was where I had to make a final decision about that was in 1996. My father was getting older. He had an opportunity to sell part of his business, not 100%. He would still remain equity and president, but he had an opportunity to sell part of his business to Resteel, which is a large steel fabricator in Baltimore, Maryland. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I was offered a position by Ranpac, which I was with after Sealed Air and some other company. And Ranpac offered me a position to promote me to executive vice president in Cleveland, Ohio. And my father approached me and said that if I came back into the business, that he wouldn't sell part of it to Resteel. So it was a tough decision. And he and I talked about it for hours and days. And we finally came up with it that the offer from Ranpac was too good to pass up. And so I took that path.
Okay. But it came with some heavy discussion and...
Very heavy. It was not easy. It was not an easy... And I had to move out in order to take the position as executive vice president. Prior to that, Ranpac's marketing and sales headquarters, which I was the vice president of, where it was in Greenwich, Connecticut. And I lived at that time in New Fairfield, Connecticut. And where I grew up was in Carmel, New York, which is 15 minutes away from New Fairfield, Connecticut. And I had to move to Cleveland to accept that position. So I also had to move away. And I'm the only one in my family that's living outside of New York. And the same thing for my wife. So it was a very difficult decision. And it was hard.
Mm. But looking back now on the other end of it, do you feel you made the right decision? Any regrets, Al?
I think you always have some regrets because even though it was a decision that my parents and I made together, I think their hearts were a little broken. And I think that the entire family was stressed out with me having to move to Cleveland.
Mm.
And take my family to Cleveland. Also now in the point that I am at, everybody else lives in New York and I still live in Cleveland. Mm. Although EasyWrap is, my office is in Lyndhurst, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
We never decided to move back because the kids were growing up and everybody's comfortable and so forth.
Yeah.
But, and also you always have that, what if I had done that? Would I be in the same position now as I would have been, you know, if I had joined the family business? And a lot of times you say, now I still have to work. I can't retire. I didn't accumulated millions and millions. Comfortable, but I can't say that I have enough money to support the lifestyle I've created on my wealth, my investments. And like anybody else, my investments go up and down like everybody else's does. So I don't know if I can say that I'm better off. I think I'm way better off for the experience that I had, because I don't think I would have had the experiences that I've had. With RANPAC, I had global responsibilities. I traveled throughout Asia, South America, Europe, North America. I had incredible international experiences. Mm-hmm. Our plant in Europe was in Heerlen, Holland. We had a plant in our plant, and our headquarter offices for Asia Pacific were in Kuala Lumpur and in Singapore. I traveled all through Asia for many years with RANPAC, and I don't think those experiences could have been ever even close to coming approached in my family business. I could honestly say I've probably been around the world 20 times, 30 times, more, maybe more.
Yeah.
So those experiences, I don't think I could have ever got. If I played Major League Baseball, I would have had to move out of town to go to some other city. As it was, I would have moved to Detroit if I remained playing baseball. I wouldn't have lived in Detroit. When I was there, I lived in Troy, Michigan.
Okay.
Nobody wanted to live in Detroit those days.
No.
Especially playing at the stadium on Trumbull Avenue. Not a good place to be. But anyway, yeah, so I can't say that. I think for the experience of it, I'm better off with what I did. But from a personal family ties thing, I think I do have some regret that I think
about. And you made a point earlier, and it casts light on the magnitude of the decision. You are the oldest son.
Yeah.
Here, I'm the youngest by 10 years, so I marginally even matter. I was an oops baby. I'm just happy to be here.
That's not true. So. For your mother, you always matter. Your mother loves you no matter what.
But the first son, you got a lot on your shoulders just on a regular day.
I know.
So it really illustrates the magnitude of the decision.
And the other part of that is both of my brothers are doctors. They didn't want to go into business. And my sister has a PhD, and she was the head of Elmsford Medical Center for many years. And my youngest sister had MS, and she worked in the family business.
Okay.
And she has since passed. But Listen, I followed my father around like I was his dog, his pet dog. That was it. Oh, he's quite a guy.
So let's fast forward for a minute to EasyWrap,
a
product that I know you're very passionate about. Tell us a little bit about how that came about and where you see that going now.
How it came about was that a friend of mine who owns a big distributorship, he was presented an opportunity from an inventor. The inventor's name was Philip Doran, and he had invented EasyWrap, which is a very unique patented product. So my friend Randy, he had an opportunity to take on this product line as the US marketing and sales arm for EasyWrap. And it's EASI wrap. So I know Randy for 40 years, and I've been on his advisory board since the day he started his business out of the trunk of his car, selling stretch film.
Okay.
An easy wrap is a stretch film product, and it's used to wrap pallets and for protection in transit. So anyway, so Randy said to me, "Hey, Al, I got this product. I want you to look at it, see what you think of it, do some research on it, and whatever." So I said, "Yeah, let me tell you, send me a sample," because I was living here. He lives in New Jersey. And I said, "Send me a sample." And by the way, he became a RANPAC distributor, my friend.
Okay.
So in any event, he sent me the sample. I researched it. I tested it, compared it to regular stuff. And this was the best product in its field. So I told him that. I said, "This is the best product in its field. I don't know anything about who the inventor is, but if you have a chance, if he's producing this product and you have a chance to distribute it in the United States, I would jump at it." I said, "But you have to make sure that he has a way of being able to handle damaged material, bad goods. Is there some kind of a way to create an inspection process and all of the standard stuff that anybody who's buying from a foreign entity would do, because it's not like they're around the corner, their plant is around the corner. You get stuck with two or three containers of bad stuff, you're in trouble. That's a lot of money. He said, would you fly to Ireland with me? Because the inventor's in Ireland. And would you help me make a deal? I said, sure. So we went there. We negotiated a deal. And he became the distributor. And he started selling. A couple of years later, Ranpak was going on the market to be sold. And I took that company from $18 million when I started to $150 million when we sold it. And we were global when we sold it.
Wow.
And so I said to Randy, I said, I'll tell you what, if Ranpak is not sold to a strategic partner, I want to come into the business. I want to make investment. I want to come into the business. And I want to be able to manufacture this product in the United States. And Preferred Plastics can be the distributor. So he said, it's funny because Philip has already asked me if I wanted to invest in this. And I told him I'd have to think about it. He said, when did he ask you that? Well, he asked me that about 6 months ago or so. I don't know manufacturing. I said, yeah, but I do. I said, and I want to jump into this. If Ranpak is sold to a bank or something like that, I have no interest in working for an investment bank. It's not what I want to do. It's not a bad thing, but it's not what I want. We went over to Ireland again. We negotiated an agreement. And part of the agreement was that I would be an investment partner with Philip and with Randy. And we would start manufacturing the product in Ireland and shipping it over to the States. And Preferred Plastics would remain the distributor and marketing arm for the company.
And how's the product doing now? What's exciting you about where it is, where it's going?
Well, the product has evolved greatly from the time we started this. And by the way, the date of this was 2003 when all of this took place.
Okay.
The product evolved great in the beginning. And then we got to the point where we wanted to build a extruding and rewinding facility here in the States, because the business was getting big enough, even just being exclusively through Preferred Plastics, which was the deal. I wanted to branch out into other distributors, but no, Randy owns Preferred Plastics, not me. No, we're going to keep it here. And that's what we did. But then COVID hit. And with COVID hit, if you recall, Ireland was completely shut down. You couldn't get anything in and out there. And then when it came back a little bit, the freight rates were so bad, we would be paying more for freight than what the value of the product was worth. Randy decided that what we're going to do is we're going to stop that, shut that down. And he was going to put up a rewinding facility. And we found a contract manufacturer to reduce the resins for us in the States. And this all took place over COVID. And then around 2022, as I recall, in March of 2022, we were ready to really ship quality product.
Wow. Wow.
And at this point, we are now expanding we're getting back our business that it was down to almost nothing. So we've rebuilt the business, and now we're trying to expand into more direct distributors, not just Preferred Plastics as a distributor. And the plant is now in Butler, New Jersey. And we no longer produce anything in Dublin, Ireland, although Philip is still very much involved.
Cool. Wow. So ultimately, it came full circle to the original vision you had.
And just to tell you a little bit about the product is like nothing else in the field. This product is truly the only shrinking stretch film. You wrap the pallets loose, as opposed to traditional stretch film products, you have to wrap the pallet, you have to tug on the film, stretch the film to get it to hold on to the pallet, hold the pallet together. This product, you wrap the pallet loose, you put tension in the corner, and the molecular structure of the film shrinks up to 30% around the pallet to give it a very tight force load, it's called, and pallet integrity. It's highly puncture resistant and has 100% elasticity. And it takes all the human error out of the use of hand film.
Wow.
And it's quite a product. So we're excited about the future.
Awesome. Looking back across your journey, having experienced first family business, then professional sports, then some global corporations, and then several entrepreneurial ventures, EasyWrap being one of them. Is there a common thread, Al, that ties it all together for you when you look back? What's the common thread that ties that together for you?
The common thread is for me is just a passion for the work I do. I love what I do. I love marketing. I love selling. I love being in front of customers. I'm a guy that learned business from the ground up, literally working in a steel yard for my father. And I love the working man. I am a working man. And I love being in dirty old plants and wrapping pallets. It juices me. And everybody gets very excited when I walk in, even the wrappers, because I work in a suit, three-piece suit. And they get a kick out of it. People say, don't you intimidate the workers? I said, to intimidate them, they want to know where I get my stuff from. And I said, I was taught by my father that you dress for success, but you dress for respect. You walk into a place, you want people to know that you respect them, that you're not going to just walk, like you wouldn't walk into church in a pair of cut-off shorts or a pair of jeans. And my father wore a suit every day. So did my grandfather. And I got that lesson from him, and I do it to this day. And I've never had somebody tell me, why are you doing that? They've never done it. I've never had a rapper that, wrapping pallets and things like that said, why are you dressed like that? Never. They've asked me about it, and they actually flatter me about it. But not that I'm doing it for that reason, because I'm not. But one thing I do know about marketing and sales is that in no way, and my father taught me a lesson for the reason to do it, but I learned a lesson on doing it. When you do it, you're doing it because you want to have the people that you go into to respect you. Mm-hmm. And you want to show them that you respect them. And you want to project the image that you are. You're a professional. You take a lot of pride in your work. You take a lot of pride in your customer relationships. And I think that these things demonstrate that. And I may be totally off the wall, but that's the way I think. And that's the way I've done it for 40 years.
I think some comparisons that can be drawn are when you played professional sports, you wore a uniform. When you were a business professional, you still wore the uniform, just a different uniform, but it's still a uniform.
Yeah, and you're so right about that, because my father always said to me too, you want to be a major league player, you got to dress like a major league player.
There you go. One more question or two before we wrap up. But you were at a crossroads, right? And you made a decision. A lot of the people listening to this program, they might be in their young 20s or young 30s, and they might be at the same crossroads, Al, where they're saying, do I join the family business or do I take my own path? If you were to give them one piece of advice, what might it be?
I would give them two pieces of advice.
Okay.
The first is to, I'm not some religious zealot, but I am a Catholic and I am a Christian. And we all have some kind of book to God. But my first suggestion is go to church and talk to the Lord about your decision. Whoever your Lord is, it doesn't matter. But I would talk to him about it, and I would get kind of peace on what you think you're being told, or the direction you think you're being sent in, or the flags that are showing you to go into a certain direction. That's number one.
Okay.
Number two, I would give a lot of serious thought and conversation with the people who are owning the business. I assume parents, could be uncles, it could be anybody, but I assume they're relatives. And I would sit, I would talk to them and tell them what your concerns are and what you want to pursue and what they think about it. Because some of them, if you want it bad enough, and if the opportunity, they're not going to let you make a bad decision. You could make a bad decision, but your family is not going to let you make a bad decision. If it's a bad decision, they will say, this is not a good decision for you, and this is why. And the reason why can't be because you're not being part of the family. That's not the reason. It could be a bad decision because you're breaking up your family. It could be a bad decision because maybe the opportunity that you think is there is not really there. Maybe your offer letter is not saying the things that makes your family say, okay, I'm comfortable with do this. He could have a career here. So there's a lot of things that you want to talk to your family and God about because you in that position where someone has offered you something, or you're in a position where you think you grow and your company is flattering you because you're having good successes there, there might be something why you're not thinking of the negatives. But you have to think about the positives and the negatives, and you should talk to your family members that you're going to be leaving and see what they think about this. Now, it's not to say that if they tell you, no, that I don't want you to do this, I want you to be part of the family business, that's not a reason. Because I had that with my mother. My mother drove me crazy when I made the decision that I'm ignoring her family, I'm going to work for other people, I'm making them money, I'm not making the family money. All of that I heard from my mother, all of that. My father had a whole different perspective on it. So really need to, again, spirited debate, have a lot of conversation, make it clear, get clarity in your mind. Words are the lens that focus the mind. Those are my suggestions.
Wonderful said. Last question. If one of our listeners wanted to learn more about you or more about EasyWrap, what's the best way for them to connect?
You can always call me. My phone number is 440-725-0469. You can always email me. My email address is astriano@prefplastics.com. You can look me up on LinkedIn and communicate to me through LinkedIn and connect, and we can communicate that way. Personally, I prefer at first just a simple phone call.
Okay.
If I don't pick up, like everybody else, I'm busy, but leave a message and leave me your number and how, and you know who you are, so I know call you back. I hate bill collectors, so I don't call them back. those are the easiest ways.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for joining me on Growing Up B2B. Your journey from family business to professional baseball to corporate leadership and now EasyWrap really captures the many paths a career can take and the lessons that each chapter brings. Again, we've been speaking with Al Striano, Vice President of Business Development at EasyWrap, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this is Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Al, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you for this opportunity. I'm really excited about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at delianet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.